What if there were a fountain of youth pill that could add decades to your life? Would you take it? Unlocking the Fountain is a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or even reverse it.
When do you think we're going to have the first 150-year-old? I think that person's already alive.
Unlocking the Fountain. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm El Amin Abdul Mahmoud. It may be hard to believe that the events of January 6th were only 6 weeks ago. Rioters broke through the United States Capitol building as lawmakers were certifying the presidential vote. It was the first time the building had been occupied since British troops set it on fire during the War of 1812. The mob waved Trump banners and shouted that they were going to, quote, stop the steal and take back the country. Trump himself had spoken to the group earlier in the day, claiming that the election had been stolen from him.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
Since then, so much has happened. Trump got deplatformed. Biden was inaugurated. Trump got impeached by the House of Representatives. But the January 6th insurrection was put in the spotlight once again during Trump's Senate impeachment trial. Trump was on trial for, quote, inciting an insurrection. If impeached, he would be prevented from seeking office ever again. The fourth impeachment trial in U.S. history was also the shortest in history. It started last Tuesday, and it ended this past Saturday. In the end, the Senate voted to acquit Trump. The Democrats were unable to sway enough Republicans in order to have the two-thirds majority they needed to impeach. For more on what happened during the Senate impeachment trial and what happens next, I'm speaking with Tia Mitchell. She's the Washington correspondent with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and was inside the Capitol when the siege took place. You're listening to Party in the USA. Let's get into it. Welcome, Tia, and thank you so much for coming on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I want to start with January 6th, and I think I want to start there because it still feels surreal to me that that was only a few weeks ago. That's why the impeachment trial is actually happening to begin with. So January 6th was that day that Congress was required by the Constitution to count and certify the electoral votes for the election. That is normally a pretty boring process, but not so this year, because midway through that process, they were interrupted by this large mob of people who broke through to occupy the building, and you were in the building that day. Tell me how that was for you.
Yeah, so usually, as you mentioned, it's a very quick process. Rarely, every now and then, a couple of states had been challenged, but not with the requisite member in each chamber to actually make the challenge go anywhere. So usually it's a symbolic challenge that is dismissed pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So we knew that was not going to be the case on the 6th. We're in the gallery, which is kind of above where the House members sit. It's where visitors sit, and it's where the media sits. And we were there listening to the Democrats saying why Arizona's Electoral College votes should be counted, and Republicans saying why they should not. And the same thing was happening in the Senate, but I was on the House floor. And the first thing that we heard was that some of the office buildings in the Capitol complex were being evacuated for security reasons, but still business as usual inside the chamber. Then we were told, get everything you need, because we have like a press gallery that's like indoors, that's through some doors. They said, we're going to lock the doors and we're going to lock down the chamber because we're hearing that outside's getting a little crazy. So we're still going to keep going with this process, but go ahead and use the bathroom. Go ahead and get any chargers you need, because once we lock the doors, you won't be able to go in and out. And so that was kind of step two. Then step three was you saw them usher out some of the leadership in the chamber, like Steny Hoyer, who's the Democratic leader. That is when things started to not get calm. But still, the House is trying to keep meeting, keep debating Arizona.
My challenge today is not about the good people of Arizona. and will stand in recess until the call of the chair.
Move, boss.
Protesters are in the building.
Thank you.
Then we were told everyone needs to put on gas masks. People are in the rotunda and gas is being used. And in case it seeps into the chamber, we don't want you guys to get affected by it. So you guys put on gas masks. And so at this point, there are 100 to 200 members of the House on the floor to watch what's happening, and plus the media. Finally, things are like at a halt. That's when members of Congress start getting a little antsy. There were Democrats saying, call your people, tell them to stop this. And then there are Republicans saying, don't ask for the police to help you now. You wanted to defund them this summer. And so it's just tempers are flaring. But we don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. There are people in the chamber. It could have been one or two people. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
We didn't know the scale. And so after a while, they decide to evacuate the chamber. And so the floor evacuated pretty quickly, but it looked like a madhouse. Everyone left behind all these papers and personal items. The gallery was a little bit harder because there are barriers between the aisles because you're supposed to exit at the door nearest you. So to exit out of one door, you have to duck underneath railings, and there are narrow seats. So it was just harder to evacuate. There wasn't one quick path. And so as we're evacuating from the gallery, they go, the rioters are getting too close. We have to lock the chamber back down. I was in a group of about 50 people, including members of Congress, the media, a few police officers who got locked back in the chamber. And that's when we could hear people banging on the doors trying to get in. We heard the gunshot come from the speaker's lobby area where the protester who tried to jump through the window got shot and killed. We could hear that gunshot. We just didn't know what was going on because it happened a floor down and behind a door. We saw when the officers and members of Congress barricaded that main door that connects to the rotunda, and we could see them fighting back as people were trying to get in. And so that was really scary. We were just behind these fold-up seats, kind of like stadium seats. Mm. And they told us, you know, get down, take cover, hunker down the best you can, because right now people are trying to get in and we can't get you out. It wasn't a long time, because what they eventually did was subdue some of the rioters who were closest to us. And after several minutes, I would say they did subdue the rioters and clear a path for us to evacuate as well. But it was several minutes where we were caught. That time was when the rioters were trying to get into the House chamber. They got into the Senate chamber.
Yes.
The Senate chamber was empty when the rioters got in. If the rioters had got into the House chamber was not empty.
Right.
It had members of Congress and members of the media. And that's the scary part in retrospect. Now that we know the scale, know the stated intent from some of those rioters, know that they had zip ties, know that they had weapons. If they had breached that chamber, and there were recognizable members of Congress in that chamber, people they would have known. That's the part luckily didn't happen. It could have been so much worse.
Do you think about what could have happened often?
Absolutely, because it's been still a part of the dialogue covering the impeachment trial and seeing the security footage and the footage from the media and the timelines that were put together. You know, that whole joint session was underway for the most part with protesters not very far away.
Mm-hmm.
And to see the violence in the language, and 5 people died that day, 2 police officers died by suicide in the days after, and dozens of other police officers were injured, some very severely. That day, we didn't know all of that.
Mm-hmm. I have to imagine that there's all this tension that you have while watching all this unfold, but then you kind of have to keep doing your job as a journalist after going through all that.
Yeah.
And also
returning to cover things like the Trump impeachment trial. And I can't imagine what it's like to carry all those memories with you as you begin to watch an impeachment trial that revolves essentially around the question of whether or not Trump incited this mob to attack Congress. The House of Representatives said, yeah, he is responsible. He made him the first president to be impeached twice by a legislative body. Mm-hmm. But then last week, his impeachment trial in the Senate began. And like, this was supposed to be a pretty simple trial altogether. It was supposed to be a much faster impeachment trial than his first one, because there's really just one article of impeachment to consider, and that is, like, did he or did he not incite that mob to attack Congress? What did the Democrats' arguments look like? How did they use the stories from that day to tell the story?
So Democrats took the approach of working in really small chunks of information, mm-hmm. aided considerably by audiovisual aids. Trump's Twitter account has been deleted, but they recreated some of the tweets they felt helped prove their case. And
yes.
they wove together the security footage from the Capitol, footage that media organizations had that some of the rioters took themselves to try to build the timeline. And it was probably the most impactful is the day they focused on the footage of, particularly in the Senate, when the Capitol was under attack, Mitt Romney almost walked right into the rioters, and an officer had to tell him to turn around and take cover. And Senator Schumer, same thing. Him and his security detail, you could see them walking and then quickly turning back around and going the opposite way. You saw footage of offices being broken into and ransacked. And you saw footage of them rummaging through the desks of the U.S. senators once they were in the chamber. And you saw footage of the senators being evacuated and then showing right down a hallway. That was where the rioters were.
Mm-hmm.
But also, even coming from Georgia, Georgia still played a part in the impeachment trial, because what the House manager said was that the then president's conduct for weeks ahead of January 6th is what led to those events happening, that he had spent the 2 months between the general election and January 6th rallying up his supporters, convincing them that the election had been stolen from him, and therefore putting in place that they needed to take action on January 6th.
Right.
So they use, for example, his call with Georgia's Secretary of State, where he said, find the votes, I need you to find the votes, and said that behavior helps prove that he intended January 6th to go down the way that it did.
So we have all this video footage, we have the Democrats reconstructing the tweets, reconstructing the timelines in that way. How did the video go over? How was the showing of the video received by the Senate?
I think even the senators who voted to acquit the president, a lot of them, most notably Mitch McConnell, said they believed that the points were made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mitch McConnell said, I believe that President Trump was responsible for inciting a riot.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the fact that you had seven senators vote to convict, even though it was not enough for a conviction, it was still the most bipartisan impeachment in history.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it was impactful. There were times where we would see members of Congress having difficulty watching some of the video, especially, you know, there was video of a police officer being crushed, crying out in pain as they were being beaten with blunt objects, being dragged into the crowd. Those videos are hard to digest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I also think that two-thirds threshold in a two-party system is very difficult to reach. And again, there's no impeachment thus far in U.S. history that has resulted in a conviction. So in a lot of ways, impeachment is political theater. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, but that's just part of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, impeachment was successful in that I think it further tarnished President Trump's image. It's making it harder for President Trump to come back. Not saying he can't, but it'll be harder. And I think it is further solidified, particularly among Democrats and independents, that he was responsible.
We're going to take a quick break there, and then when we come back, we'll keep talking more about this trial and how it went.
Hey, my name's Jamie Poisson, and I'm the host of Front Burner. It's the CBC's daily news podcast. And every day, we're discussing the big events and fault lines shaping Canada and the world. Politics, economics, social movements, you name it. Sometimes we even talk about really fun stuff, like the enduring relevance of Lord of the Rings. You can hear Front Burner on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we are back, and I want to get into the ways that Trump's team framed their arguments, because there was a strong feeling that we weren't going to have 17 Republicans break with the party in order to vote to convict Donald Trump. So it didn't really matter whether their arguments were good or bad necessarily, but let's talk about their strategy. What was their legal strategy in terms of arguing that Trump was not responsible?
Well, they made several different arguments. One of the arguments they made is that constitutionally, a former president cannot stand trial. And that argument was made prior to the trial, and one of the Republican senators raised it as a point of order, and that point of order was defeated by a majority of senators. And then on the first day of the impeachment trial, Trump's lawyers themselves raised the same issue that it's not constitutional to impeach a former president. And again, that was put to a vote, did not get a majority vote, and so the impeachment trial moved forward. Then Trump's attorney's defense was that, A, he did not incite the violence, that he believed that the election was stolen from him, but that none of the language he used was about violence. It was just an honest-to-God concern that this election was improper and fraudulent. And so they talked about that call with the Georgia Secretary of State. They said it was just about urging him to do the right thing and make sure that the election was legal and make sure he double checked. And it wasn't about intimidating him. And when it came to saying find the votes, it was find legally cast votes or find votes that were illegal and throw them out, not just find votes to make Trump win. They said that the timeline Democrats set out doesn't prove that Trump incited the violence because we're not going to really fill in the blanks to give you that full timeline. They also pointed out that there were junctures, you know, in Trump's speech, he said, you're going to march down to the Capitol and disrupt Congress, but do it peacefully. And so they said, see, he used the word peacefully, so he didn't encourage violence. And hours later, he said,
we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special.
Just like the Democrats, they pulled out snippets and excerpts of what the president had said to say. It shows that he was not encouraging violence.
At the end of the day, the Senate, I guess, ended up accepting those arguments because 17 Republicans needed to vote with the Democrats to get to a two-thirds majority to convict, and that did not end up happening. Let's talk about the consequences of this acquittal. Does the acquittal challenge the custom of a peaceful transfer of power, do you think? Does it enable something?
I think both acquittals, but particularly this one, raises the question, what can a president do to be convicted? You know, if it's not spreading election misinformation for 2 months and then encouraging your supporters to disrupt a joint session of Congress, what is the threshold?
Right.
And so I think that's the question, because our American political system is based a lot on like a gentleman's agreement that we're going to do it the right way most of the time.
Right.
I think Trump has showed us that our democracy is really vulnerable with the wrong leader in place. Because all it takes is for someone to say, yeah, I don't want to follow the rules. And there's really not a lot you can do about it. And particularly if their party stands with them. And that's what we've seen with Donald Trump. Even Republicans who believe he has broken the rules, has tarnished our democracy, has at times acted in a way that was not fitting of the office of president, they have not taken steps to rein him in. Look at Mitch McConnell. He voted to acquit. but then had this passionate speech about how wrong he thinks President Trump is, but not wrong enough for him to vote to convict him. So to me, it showed not just peaceful transition of power. Every aspect of our democracy is vulnerable to bad actors. And that's something we've known. Black people in America, we're raised knowing that.
Yes.
Because we saw our Constitution used against my people for hundreds of years. And it took a lot of Black people protesting in ways that were way more peaceful than what they could have been justified as protesting. But because they were so concerned about any violence being used against them, they withstood dog bites and water hoses and beatings. And it still took them marching for years just to get the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've seen our Constitution used in ways that are harmful to democracy. And I think for a lot of people, particularly white people who don't necessarily carry the scars of oppression, I think it's easy for white people to say, oh my God, I thought we were past that. I thought America is better than this.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe what Donald Trump helps exemplify is, again, America can be better than this, but it's easy for America to go back down a dark path if the leaders allow it. This path was Donald Trump. The next leader could be a whole different path.
I was going to say that if you are Black in America, then you have a long history of learning about the ways that people can become bad actors virtually overnight. And the acquittal is interesting to me because one senator, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, said that this acquitting will likely embolden the fringe of hardcore extremists who consider January 6th not a day of infamy, but a day of victory. I guess I'm curious if that rings true for you. Do you think that those people who participate in the insurrection would look at the acquittal of Donald Trump and look at that and say, we won?
I think there's a difference between those who are charged and face serious federal charges and federal time. Those people are now angry because they're saying, I went to the Capitol and did what the president told me, and now I'm facing federal crimes and a record and whatever comes with it. Those people are upset. But as we know, relatively few people have been charged compared to the number of people that participated in protests at different times throughout that day, whether they went in the Capitol or not. And of course, they pale in comparison in general to Trump's base across America, which is in the millions. And so I think those people feel vindicated by his acquittal. And those people, again, remain supportive of him. Those people continue to believe the lies that he is told about the election, which, again, is something that our democracy is going to suffer from in the short term, and something that is going to affect the Republican Party for the short term. So, yes, I think those people feel that the right thing was done. And quite frankly, we see Republican parties across America who are taking action to censor or punish the Republicans who voted to impeach former President Trump or voted to convict him in the Senate.
Yes.
They're the ones facing the backlash back in their conservative states.
Now, this is, of course, not the end of the road for processing and dissecting January 6th.
Right.
There's now already a massive criminal investigation underway. There are other investigations, including one by the Department of Defense, into whether military members were involved. The New York State Bar Association is looking into whether Rudy Giuliani had a role and could recommend him for disbarment. We've seen some people actually call for President Trump to face criminal charges. What do you think is the likelihood of that? Do you think he'll face any consequences from January 6th?
I think it's probably more likely he could face civil charges. Again, those supporters who are facing real penalties because they said he told them to do this and they felt they were doing his bidding. We know that civil cases have a lower threshold than criminal cases. And I think it just takes one or two to say, you know what? He has harmed me financially. You know, I lost my job because I did this. Or I've paid a lot of money in attorney's fees because I did this. Or my reputation has been tarnished. Or I'm facing jail time.
Yes.
And I mean, this is something long term because they've got to let their criminal cases play out before they can then pivot to say they want to hold him accountable for whatever they face. But I do think if enough of these Republicans are still angry when all is said and done, he could see civil lawsuits. I think criminal will be tougher. Mm-hmm. Now, what he is facing in Georgia, again, is investigations based on that phone call, because they are not necessarily related to January 6th, but related to trying to intimidate, you know, an elected official. And so I think there may be other states, Pennsylvania, for an example, Arizona, who could, again, go that way. These are probably very rarely used criminal charges that probably don't carry a whole lot of penalties behind them. But those may be a little bit more likely than criminal charges related directly to January 6th, because he did keep some distance, both physically, even though he said he was going to march with the marchers, he did not.
We're going to walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. I love Pennsylvania Avenue. And we're going to the Capitol.
But also, just because he said peacefully go and things like that, it may be harder and not worth the effort of bringing criminal charges against him for January 6th. You know, he faces a lot of investigations into his business dealings and things like that personally. And then January 6th will be investigated, again, not just about President Trump, but those investigative reports, as they come out, I think will include analysis of his role. Those may not result in charges, but they will provide further evidence for history of the role he played, and that won't reflect well on him for history's sake.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, it seems like in many ways there is the national processing of January 6th, which is something that I'm not sure has begun. If it has, it's something that's going to take months, maybe years, quite a bit to process there. Now, there's also, for you, there is a personal dimension to this. You were in the building. Where are you at? Like, what is it like to cover a trial where you're a participant and a witness? Like, you were there, you saw some of the stuff that happened. How do you begin to process some of what you saw?
Yeah, it's interesting because even like the day of the trial, I was very much in reporter mode. It's not that I don't think about it and acknowledge what I experienced, but I feel like when I'm in the Capitol covering the trial or covering Congress, I focus on that part of my job and don't try to bring in my personal feelings or thoughts in the moment. I allow myself time to do that when I'm home. But I will say, you know, it's not that I'm immune to what I experienced. But as a journalist, I find that there are different things that are easier to set aside than others. And I don't find it that hard to set aside that I experienced this personally. Maybe because I know that other people experienced worse, other people saw worse. There were journalists in the riot mm-hmm. who were, you know, worried about being accosted or worried about being assaulted. The rioters I came across were subdued at gunpoint by the police that allowed us to evacuate. They were not a danger to me in real time, mm-hmm. the ones that I saw with my own eyes. So it's not easy sometimes, but I can do it.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your insights and your experience of what that has felt like for you, because it has that extra personal dimension to it. And I'm glad that you're managing okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
And that is it for this week. Tia Mitchell is a Washington correspondent with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm your host, Alamine Abdul-Mahmoud, and I will talk to you on Thursday on the regular version of Party Lines with Rosemary Barton. I'll see you then.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.